Now, I want to start with something that is going to bother you, and it should bother you, because it has been taught wrong for a very long time. People say energy is a thing. They say light is made of pure energy. They say when you split an atom, you release energy as if some glowing invisible substance pours out of the nucleus like water from a cracked pipe. And I am here to tell you that is not what is happening. Not even close. What is actually happening is far more interesting, far more mechanical, and honestly, far more satisfying once you see it clearly. Let me start with what energy actually is, because this is where the whole confusion begins. Energy is not a substance. It is not a fluid. It is not a glowing field you can bottle up and pour from one place to another. Energy is a number. That is it. It is a calculated quantity, a piece of mathematical bookkeeping that physicists invented specifically because nature happens to keep that number constant across time. We notice that when you track all the motion and all the positions and all the configurations of particles in a closed system, this particular number you compute never changes. And because it is conserved, it became incredibly useful. We gave it a name. We called it energy. But naming a bookkeeping trick does not make it a substance. Here is the analogy that I think makes this absolutely clear. Imagine a child playing with a set of blocks. The child has 14 blocks. You come back the next day and the child still has 14 blocks, even though some are hidden under the bed and some are stacked in the corner. The number 14 is conserved. But you would not walk into that room and say, "Where is the 14 stored?" You would not say the 14 leaked out or the 14 was released. The 14 is just a count, a tally that describes the physical configuration of real objects. Energy is exactly the same thing. It is not a block. It is the count of blocks. Kinetic energy is counting how fast the blocks are moving. Potential energy is counting how high they are lifted. Chemical energy is counting the configurations of electrons in molecular bonds. You are always just tallying up real physical situations. You are never measuring a mystical substance called energy itself. So when someone says a photon is made of pure energy, they are making a category error. A photon is a real physical thing. It is a propagating oscillation of the electromagnetic field. It has a momentum. It has a frequency. It exerts a physical force when it hits a surface. You can verify this. The pressure of sunlight on a solar sail is measurable, calculable, real. A photon is not a package of glowing energy stuff. It is a wave in a physical field, and the number we calculate to describe how that wave behaves is what we call its energy. The energy is the description, not the object. Now here is where things get genuinely strange and mechanical at the same time. We know photons are massless. A photon traveling freely through empty space has zero rest mass. If you were somehow able to catch up to a photon and sit next to it at rest, which you cannot because it always moves at the full speed of light, but hypothetically, you would measure its rest mass as zero. So far, so good. The interesting question is this. What happens when you do not let the photon travel freely? What happens when you trap it? Picture a box, not just any box, a perfectly sealed mirrored box where the walls reflect light with absolute perfection, zero absorption. Now you fire a single photon into this box and seal it. The photon bounces forever between the walls, back and forth, at the speed of light. Now here is the remarkable physical fact. That box is heavier than an identical empty box. You can put both boxes on an ideal scale, and the box containing the bouncing photon will register more mass. The massless particle, by being confined, by having its travel redirected and trapped, has contributed to the physical inertia of the system. This is not metaphor. This is not poetry about energy being equivalent to mass. This is the direct mechanical consequence of special relativity. The stress-energy tensor, which is the mathematical object that describes how mass and energy and momentum and pressure are distributed in spacetime, treats confined radiation differently from free radiation. A photon moving freely contributes momentum in one direction. A photon bouncing back and forth averages its momentum contributions to zero in that direction. The net effect is that the system resists acceleration. It has inertia. It has mass. The geometry of confinement, the simple fact of bouncing rather than escaping, is what generates mass from a massless particle. This is the core of what Einstein wrote when he produced E equals mc². But people almost always misread that equation. They read it as saying mass converts into energy, as if the mass evaporates, and a cloud of energy substance appears in its place. What the equation is actually saying is that the mass of a system and the total internal energy of that system are proportional. They are describing the same physical configuration from different angles. The c squared is just a conversion factor, a unit translation between the way we happen to measure mass and the way we happen to measure energy. The physics is telling you that mass is not a separate fundamental category from motion and confinement. Mass is what confined motion looks like from the outside. Let me take you into the place where this becomes almost absurd in how literal it is. Your body. The human body is made of atoms. Atoms are made of protons and neutrons in the nucleus, plus electrons around the outside. Now here is the part that most people are never told. The protons in your body, the protons in every nucleus of every atom, of every object you have ever touched, are not made of some dense, heavy classical matter. A proton is made of quarks. Three quarks bound together by the strong nuclear force, which is mediated by particles called gluons. And here is the punchline. The quarks themselves account for only about 1% of the mass of the proton. The other 99% comes from the kinetic energy of the quarks moving inside the proton and from the energy of the gluon field confining them. The gluons themselves are massless. They are particles of the strong force field, and they travel at the speed of light inside the proton. The quarks are nearly massless, and they move at velocities close to the speed of light inside the tiny confinement volume of the proton. The proton is, in the most literal and physical sense, a mirrored box. It is a region of space where massless and nearly massless particles are bouncing around violently at nearly the speed of light, and the geometry of that confinement is what gives the proton its mass. Your physical weight, the number the scale reads when you stand on it, is almost entirely the result of massless particles being trapped in a small space. This is not an approximation or a simplification. It is what the equations of quantum chromodynamics, the full theory of the strong nuclear force, actually predict, and what experiments at particle accelerators have confirmed to extraordinary precision. The mass of matter is kinetic pressure. It is the inertia of trapped motion. You are not made of solid, dense material substance in the classical sense. You are made of fields and their confinement geometry. The solidity you feel is the electromagnetic repulsion between electron clouds and atoms. The weight you have is the inertia of confined massless field quanta. You are, in the most rigorous physical language available, a walking collection of trapped light-speed motion. Now let us talk about what actually happens in a nuclear reaction, because this is where the popular description goes most badly wrong. When a uranium nucleus fissions in a nuclear reactor or a bomb, people say it releases energy. The mass decreases, and the energy comes out. But what does this actually mean mechanically? Before the fission, you have a large nucleus. The quarks and gluons inside its protons and neutrons are in certain confinement configurations. The nuclear binding energy of the whole nucleus is storing additional kinetic and field energy through the strong force interactions between the nucleons. Now the nucleus splits into smaller fragments. The total rest mass of those fragments is slightly less than the rest mass of the original uranium nucleus. That mass difference is about 0.1%. What happened to it? Did it turn into a magical energy substance? No. What happened is that the confinement geometry changed. The binding configurations of the nuclear fragments are slightly less energetic than the original configuration. Some of the kinetic energy that was trapped in the nuclear binding is now no longer trapped. It is free to propagate. It becomes kinetic energy of the fragments flying apart at high speed. It becomes photons, gamma rays, which are electromagnetic waves propagating freely through space. It becomes heat, which is random kinetic motion of atoms. The total tally, the total count of blocks, is preserved. Nothing was created, nothing was destroyed. The confinement structure changed, and motion that was previously trapped in nuclear geometry is now free to travel. The bomb does not release energy as a substance. The bomb opens boxes. It breaks the confinement structures that were keeping the trapped motion locked inside nuclear geometry, and the previously confined motion propagates outward as free waves and high-velocity particles. The destruction comes from those free propagating waves and particles interacting with matter. The heat comes from those particles and photons depositing their kinetic motion into surrounding atoms. There is no energy cloud that pours out. There is a cascade of newly liberated physical motion. This reframing matters enormously for understanding the vacuum of space, which is the next layer of the onion. Empty space is not empty in any classical sense. The quantum vacuum is filled with what physicists call zero-point fluctuations, pairs of virtual particles constantly appearing and annihilating, the ground state energy of every quantum field permeating all of space. This is not mysticism. This has been measured. The Casimir effect is a direct experimental demonstration. If you take two very precisely flat metal plates and bring them extremely close together in a vacuum, they are pushed toward each other by a measurable force. This force arises because the geometry of the narrow gap between the plates excludes certain wavelengths of vacuum fluctuations that are present outside the gap. The difference in the vacuum field between inside and outside the gap creates a net inward pressure. So even the vacuum of space is a physical medium. It has field structure, it has ground state behavior. What we call empty space is the lowest energy configuration of all the quantum fields that exist, and those fields are real physical objects that permeate everything. A photon is not some detached package of energy floating through nothing. A photon is an excitation, a wave, propagating through the electromagnetic field that fills all of space. The field is always there. The photon is a disturbance in it. When the photon is absorbed by an atom, the disturbance in the electromagnetic field transfers its oscillation into the internal configuration of the atom, raising the electron to a higher orbital. The electromagnetic wave becomes electron orbital energy, which is itself just a different confinement configuration of electron motion in the electric field of the nucleus. The block count is preserved. The form of the confinement changes. Let me explain why the invariant mass concept is so important here. Because this is the precise mathematical statement of everything I have been describing. In special relativity, there is a quantity called the invariant mass or rest mass of a system, and it is calculated from both the total energy and the total momentum of the system. The formula is that the invariant mass squared equals the total energy squared minus the total momentum squared divided by c to the fourth. For a single free photon, the energy equals pc. The momentum times the speed of light, so the invariant mass calculates to zero. A photon has zero invariant mass. But for two photons moving in opposite directions, the momenta cancel in the calculation even though the energies add. The invariant mass of the two-photon system is not zero, it is non-zero, just like the mirrored box. This is the mathematical formalism behind why confinement creates mass. When you have multiple photons or massless particles moving in different directions inside a confined system, the momentum contributions partially cancel, but the energy contributions add. The invariant mass of the confined system is greater than the sum of the invariant masses of the individual free components. The geometry of the confinement, the fact that the momenta point in multiple directions, rather than all in the same direction, is encoded in the mathematics, and it produces mass. This is why a hot object is literally heavier than a cold one. The random thermal motion of atoms, the fact that the kinetic energy inside is isotropic and pointing in all directions, contributes to the invariant mass of the object. A cup of hot coffee has more mass than the same cup after it cools down. Not by much, the difference is far below any practical measurement threshold, but the physics is absolutely precise about this. Now think about what this says about solid matter. The atoms that make up the table you are sitting at are mostly empty space. If you scaled a hydrogen atom so the nucleus was the size of a golf ball, the electron orbital would be about 2 kilometers away. Everything in between is the quantum field of the electromagnetic interaction, which is not empty in the sense of containing nothing but is not dense-packed matter either. The apparent solidity of the table, the fact that your hand does not pass through it, comes from electromagnetic repulsion. The electron clouds of your hand atoms and the table atoms repel each other because they are both negatively charged. The force you feel as solidity is electromagnetic field pressure. Inside each nucleus, the confinement story plays out at a deeper level. The quarks do not sit still at three fixed points inside the proton like billiard balls. They are smeared across the proton volume as quantum mechanical probability distributions, constantly exchanging gluons, with the gluon field itself carrying a substantial fraction of the proton momentum. The whole proton is a dynamic, churning, relativistic system of massless and nearly massless field quanta in a self-sustaining confinement configuration. The confinement is maintained by the property of the strong force, called asymptotic freedom, which means that as you try to pull quarks apart, the force between them gets stronger rather than weaker. You cannot liberate a single quark in isolation. If you put in enough energy to try to separate one, the field energy in the stretching flux tube between the quarks becomes sufficient to create a new quark-antiquark pair from the vacuum, and you end up with two mesons rather than a free quark. The confinement is absolute. The box cannot be opened in that particular way. What can be opened is the nuclear box. The nucleons, the protons and neutrons, can be rearranged into different nuclear configurations, and different configurations have different total binding energies. When the nuclear configuration shifts to one with less total binding energy, the difference propagates away as kinetic energy and radiation. The quarks and gluons inside each individual nucleon remain confined. Only the nucleon-to-nucleon binding configuration changes. The quark-gluon box stays sealed. The nuclear box gets reorganized. The mass difference between the initial and final nuclear configurations propagates away as free radiation and kinetic motion. The deepest statement that modern physics makes about the nature of matter is this: there is no fundamental immutable substance at the bottom of things. There are fields and their excitations. There are confinement geometries that trap those excitations into stable or metastable configurations. There is the mathematics of conservation laws that tracks how those configurations evolve. Mass is not a primary property. Mass is what the invariant calculation of a confined system produces. It is an emergent property of the dynamics of confinement, not a label attached to lumps of substance. When you hold a rock in your hand, the weight you feel is electromagnetic repulsion from the electron clouds in the rock pushing against the electron clouds in your hand. The mass you are lifting is the inertia of confined quarks and gluons moving at relativistic speeds inside protons, inside nuclei, inside atoms that are themselves mostly field. The rock is an extraordinarily stable confinement configuration of fields and their dynamics. It feels solid because electromagnetic field pressure is real physical pressure. It has mass because confined relativistic motion has inertia. But the rock is not made of some primordial solid stuff. It is made of physics. It is a knot in the field. And light, a photon, is not a packet of pure energy substance traveling through space. It is an excitation of the electromagnetic field, a propagating wave with definite momentum and frequency, zero rest mass, and behavior that is completely described by the classical and quantum theories of electromagnetism. It carries the number we call energy in the sense that tracking it keeps our conservation law books balanced. But it does not carry energy the way a truck carries cargo. It is energy in the bookkeeping sense, not in the substance sense. When a photon is absorbed, no energy substance is transferred. A field excitation in one mode is converted into a field excitation in another mode. The count is preserved. The configuration changes. The fact that the universe runs its mechanics this way, through fields and confinement and the invariance of certain calculated quantities, is not a mystery to be left at the level of metaphor. It is exactly the kind of thing that has precise mathematical expression, experimental verification, and deep explanatory power. The mirrored box thought experiment becomes the proton in quantum chromodynamics. The block counting analogy becomes Noether's theorem, which proves mathematically that every conservation law in physics follows from a corresponding symmetry of the laws of nature. Energy conservation follows from the fact that the laws of physics are the same today as they were yesterday, from time translation symmetry. The blocks are not stored anywhere. The count is conserved because the rules are time invariant. This is where the strangeness and the rigor meet in the most satisfying way. The reason energy is conserved is not that there is some cosmic reservoir of energy substance that gets shuffled around. It is that the mathematical laws governing physical fields and their dynamics do not change over time. If the laws are time symmetric, then the number we define as energy must be constant. The conservation is a consequence of the symmetry of the rules, and the mass of matter is a consequence of the geometry of confinement. These are not separate mysteries. They are the same kind of insight, applied at different levels of the same physical description. You are a confinement structure in a universe of fields. Your mass is the inertia of trapped motion. Your solidity is electromagnetic pressure. The light that lets you see this screen is a propagating field excitation that carries momentum and has a calculable tally number we call energy. None of it is substance in the classical sense, and all of it is exactly as mechanical and precise as physics can make it. That is the actual situation. And I think once you see it that clearly, you cannot unsee it.